I don't want a pickle. Just want to ride on my motorcycle. Okay, Nokomoto episode 13.
Here we go.
Okay, 2 weeks away from Coda now, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it's getting closer and closer. Okay, I'm your host, MotoG Pete. With me is Swiggy.
Yep.
Now, I think we're going to return to form and do a jump straight to best worst bike in the world.
Yep.
Okay, Swiggy, you're going first. And the best bike in the world is?
The KLR 650.
Oh, nice. I love these.
Now, we can go on and on about the stats, which are not impressive, but that's not the point.
No, it's not.
What makes this bike so great is how reliable it is while also being incredibly cheap and disposable.
Okay, on the reliability thing, is the doohickey fix, do you have to do that on these anymore?
I don't think so.
Okay, they did. Okay, I never knew, but
here's the thing. You can treat this bike like a six-year-old treats their first bicycle without training wheels.
Yeah.
And no kickstand. Like, if you didn't have a kickstand, every time you got to your destination,
just lean it against the wall.
You could just, like, stand on one peg, roll it in, and just dump it in your lawn and walk in the door. Because if you just need transportation or you want to go on some sort of adventure, possibly in South America, mm-hmm. or in Africa, or you know, somewhere, or if you're just going on an adventure like through crossing America off-road, you can pick up one of these for like $2,000, beat it to shit, and still probably sell it for $1,500 5,000 miles later.
Yeah.
After you've horrendously abused it. Because I believe around 2010 or so, this was a $5,500 bike new. Today, a 2018 is like $6,500 brand new.
Yeah.
And they depreciate fairly quickly. But what that really means is it's kind of like a Honda Civic.
It's a commodity.
Yeah. You can just, you know, pick it up with 50,000 miles on it, abuse it, and still sell it for what you paid for it kind of deal.
Yeah. You know, what I like about the KLR is, without being outrageous, it has a very distinct look to it. Especially right. In like the whole dual sport range. Because I guess this is more dual sport. I kind of think of it more as what an adventure bike should be. But it's kind of like the biggest dual sport, pretty much.
Right.
And you can spot them a mile away. I never mistake these for anything else. Mm-hmm. I can always spot one of these versus a DR, for example. I don't know, there's just a look about it. It's not a beautiful bike, but you know exactly what it is when you see it.
Well, it'd be kind of difficult to mix the two up, especially when a DRZ is going to have, you know, maybe a 1.8 or a 2 gallon tank. And this has a 6.1 gallon tank on the front of it.
Aren't DRs the big ones like this? What's the Suzuki one that's big like this? I'm sure it's the DR.
The DRZ is a 400.
Don't they do a 650 as well?
They do a 650 as well.
Yeah.
But they're not as ridiculous as this one is.
Right.
Like, I mean, this bike is 430 pounds wet, which is gigantic for a dirt bike.
Yeah. But again, it's kind of more of a dual sport. It's not really right. A dirt bike.
Yeah. And again, it's only making, you know, it's only making 42 horsepower, and it's something like 35 foot-pounds of torque. But again, this is the bike, this is kind of like a Civic, which is in its own terrain, it's just meant to get you there. It's not meant to get you there fast.
This is a slow and steady wins the race sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might show up with your Africa Twin or whatever else you've got, and you might be running into some mechanical issues along the way. There's really not a whole lot that can go wrong with this machine.
Right.
Yeah, there is a big cult of these things. And I just see so many just like college kids just riding them around. And even they kind of find a life in a lot of different roles for people.
Because they're so simple to fix and because they're fairly sturdy, nobody just kind of like gives up on a DRZ or on a
KLR.
Nobody gives up on a KLR. It's just kind of like, it's just going to keep going.
Yeah, you don't see the Craigslist KLR project bike listing, do you?
No.
I think if there's a KLR that's not working, it's not very long before some mechanic or like farm kid or someone finds out that someone has a non-running KLR and is like, I'll give you like $50 for it.
Yeah.
And 3 weeks later, they're thrashing it around the woods or whatever they're doing, right? I could go on about like features I wish a bike like this had, but again, that's not the point. It's super right. simple.
And it's how cheap it is for what it enables you to do that makes this bike fit into a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it the best bike in the world.
You know, people say like the Swiss Army knife of bikes. Everyone's like a lot of people are looking for the bike that will do everything for them.
This bike is the sturdiest hammer.
Exactly. Well, you know what it is? It's like the Leatherman of bikes, right? So while it has plenty of functions and tools, right? Its knife isn't that great. Its screwdriver isn't that great. Its, you know, scissors aren't that great, but they're all good, right? Right. It would be a strong runner up for the ultimate doomsday prepper bike if the TCI 800, whatever that bike is, didn't exist, that diesel bike. This probably is right now, actually, the doomsday prepper bike of choice right now.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you can get that weird diesel bike here yet, but the days are coming, KLR, your doomsday status is on notice. But yeah, it's indestructible. This is the kind of bike that, you know, like you said, it doesn't matter how beat up it is. This bike kind of looks good with the home done camo spray paint job, right?
Oh, yeah. After a certain point, you can just kind of keep dumping this bike. And as long as you don't bend the forks or crack the radiator or tear off a foot peg, you really can't depreciate it anymore.
Yeah,
it just kind of keeps going and it hits that base price, but it's still just as useful as it was when it was pristine.
You know, maybe it's not the Leatherman of bikes. It's like the 80s pickup truck of motorcycles. You don't, like you said, you don't have to care about this thing.
Yeah, it's like if you back up into a lamppost with your 80s pickup truck, it's like, what did this cost me? Absolutely nothing.
Exactly. And this bike doesn't suffer from having scratches or dents or anything. If I see one that's just like kind of all beat to shit, I'm kind of like, nice. This guy's using this thing.
Well, you know what this is? This is the polar opposite to something like the Ducati Multistrada, where it's like a $21,000 adventure bike. Now,
that you would go extreme lengths to not scratch.
Yeah.
The whole point of this is to scratch it up.
Yeah, which is kind of, you know, this is like the old built for purpose Jeep Wrangler.
Yeah.
Where it's not insanely powerful, but it's very capable at what it does. And it has a huge cult following, and it actually gets used for what it was designed for, as opposed to, I don't know, the Porsche Cayenne.
Yeah, if you know a girl that drives a Jeep, introduce her to the KLR 650, and you might make a motorcyclist.
Yeah.
I like this Jeep comparison. It's very much the Jeep mindset. This is as close as you really get to like a rock crawler in a motorcycle, isn't it? I mean, you got that. It's nice and high up and it's got the right kind of tires for it. It's got, you know, all that suspension travel. It's got just enough power to kind of go up a steep hill, not very quickly, mind you, but you know, This would be an ideal candidate for our really weird idea for a motorcycle winch.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Okay, the other day we were discussing motorcycle winches and how this could possibly work. And my idea for this was coming off the side of the crankcase, like really, I guess like just on like the other side of like the stator, maybe if like the pole went like the crank, like went all the way right through the stator. And then you could take your stator cap off and you have this like long rod that goes through.
You know how you could actually do it? You would just have it function the same way like a dual clutch works. But instead of having a completely separate clutch engaging the other gears, it just engages the winch. So you have like another crank.
Okay, so going. It comes off the clutch side instead, you're saying?
No, it goes like inside through the other.
Okay, but anyway, basically off the crank, you've got this like, you know, housing off the side and wound up in that. Is a steel line for your winch, and then that would run off and then go through a pulley in between your forks, so that you could run that up to a tree or something, tie it, and then you'd have like a super low down gear, and then you could just run it up, or you could also have the option to run your starter to do it as well. Either way, I don't know. I think a motorcycle winch is something that's totally doable. And this is the kind of bike that it would be perfect on. You would never put it stock because the whole point is cheap, cheerful, and capable for this bike. But that's like the sort of like really cool aftermarket thing I think some people would go for. Anyway, yeah, this is one of the bikes I've seen. This bike is the most guilty. Well, I won't say guilty because I kind of admire homemade luggage guy. But this is the most common offender for like homemade luggage. This is the bike.
This is the bike you're most likely to see with two actual milk crates strapped to the back.
Well, what I see a lot of is the guys that go get the Harbor Freight toolboxes. Oh. And like a little bit of like, I don't know, just some metal brackets, and they just create their own like racks across the back of it. I see that a lot with these. Or it's straight like, up like tackle boxes or whatever.
You know, if you see somebody who's done a weird mod to their KLR and they've chopped it up a bit, and you went up to them and naively asked them, like, "Well, what about the resale value?" They would just laugh in your face.
But, you know, homemade, like, you know, Harbor Freight toolbox luggage guy is a hero in my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
He's an absolute hero, and I love that guy. And, again, there's something about the KLR, and I think it's the same thing where it doesn't suffer from scratches. It doesn't suffer from having improvised luggage. In fact, it makes it cooler somehow. I'm not sure how or why, what exactly the dynamic is. Because it never involves more than $36 and a trip to the hardware store for whatever, usually less, for whatever they've rigged up, right? This is a bike that is probably not rarely seen with a gun on it somewhere. Guys that ride this never have proper motorcycle gear either. I mean, they've usually got a helmet, but... there's a lot of guys riding these in Carhartt jackets that you see a lot of that. You also see, like I said, a lot of college kids just in flannel or whatever. It's got a lot of range, doesn't it, in the kind of people that ride it. But there are a few things you can really zero in on. Like I said, doomsday prepper hunters love this bike. I don't know why it's crazy loud, but I don't know. It's cool. What's not to love about a great big 650 that, you know, performs better than a Suzuki Savage, at least, and is indestructible?
Exactly.
All right. Best bike in the world. I agree. Okay. Moving on. Okay. This is going to be pretty controversial. The worst bike in the world this week, it pains me to say this, is a Buell. Specifically, the S3T Thunderbolt. this is before Buell got cool, everybody. I know that we're finally going to get a flood of emails of people going, how could you trash on a Buell? Well, I'm gonna pretty hard. Because first off, this might be the ugliest motorcycle of all time.
Ooh.
Okay. So first of all, I'm going to preface this with, you know, I have a huge man crush on Eric Buell. I don't know what kind of barbiturates he was like hooked on when he came up with the front fairing design for this thing. It's like if, who's the Transformer? It's like if Optimus Prime, if you imagine Optimus Prime from the 80s cartoon and like gave him Down syndrome, it's something like that. It's terrible. I don't know what's going on with the completely half finished seat design. Don't know what's going on there.
Yeah. And all of a sudden it's weird. Cause there's like, you've got like this, you've got a few straight lines on it, but then you have like the big sweeping subframe.
Yeah.
That with matched up with the completely naked, stripped down motor. And then you've got like the weird, what is that black box along the side there up near the front?
That's the air box.
That's the air box.
Yeah.
Just sticking out.
Well, okay. And that air box is there because that's where the air box is with a different cover covering up the carburetors on a Harley Sportster 1200.
Right. But it doesn't make sense to have
it the just air sits box out there in the open, and it's not symmetrical. There's nothing on the other side.
But
either.
This is going to be a fuel and frame bike.
Nope.
Oh, it's not?
No, it's a tube frame. Look at it.
Oh,
and okay. Speaking of the frame, they're always like a weird color offset from the bike on these. And the frame looks sort of like you took like a Ducati trellis and just melted it. Right. It's really putting me off how the frame looks on this thing. So it's got a monoshock mounted underneath the engine, which, you know, at the time Eric Buell spouted all sorts of great reasons for having low down weight and this and that, but it just doesn't work very well. Not to mention it's like, You just can't replace it. There's nothing to do to improve it. It's not adjustable. It's terrible. The brakes, this is before Buell figured out how to make the ZTL brake thing really work. So they're shit. It's not even cool for the engine because this is no different than a Harley Sportster 1200 engine. It's the same bore, the same stroke, the same horsepower, the same torque, the same compression. It is 100% a Sportster engine. There's nothing cool about this one. It's not like the cool, you know, Thunderstorm engine that's in the XB series where, you know, it's stroked out super cool. You know, this is what a Harley engine could have been. Nope. This is a straight up Sportster engine. This bike has extreme difficulty braking 100 miles an hour. It's like 80 horsepower. I don't know how much is getting to the back wheel. It is big torque. It's got like 70 or 80 foot-pounds of torque, but it does not have the horsepower to match that to make it to live up to what it's supposed to be. This is supposed to be like a sort of sport touring version of the Cyclone. I think it's the same frame as the Cyclone, but it's really just a big disappointment all around. And here's
this is like a Buell without everything that
makes a Buell cool.
Yeah,
exactly. It is still unusual, and it is still quirky, but not in a way that really works.
This is kind of like. This is kind of like when you're given a homework assignment and you've got to come up with like five examples of something, or you have to talk about like five different events for like your history class or something, or you have to make like five little like an art class when you have to draw like five different pictures of something, and your first three were really good, but then you kind of ran out of ideas, and then like right before class, after you got to school, like you just scribbled something down and like this is what came out, and you're like, you know what, I did what you told me to, kind of.
Yeah. So again, this bike does not have great handling. It has none of those little things. Like when people attack Buells for like their flaws, you can go, oh yeah, but it's got these cool things about it. This doesn't have that stuff. The design is like behind the times, even for the 90s when this came out, right? This didn't even look cool in the 90s. It's really off-putting. It's sort of got a tank that kind, or airbox, well, it is a tank in this case, that's kind of similar looking to the ones that are still on Buells, or sorry, not still on Buells, but were at the end, but no, not quite. It has, all the controls are really cheap and bullshit on these. If you find one, they're just never in great shape. The plastic's just like lost all of its, I don't even know what the word is, but it's all gone dull and it's awful. If you thought like the gauges looked really, you know, super dated and cheesy on the XB series, they're even worse here. You know, everything's written in like really super cheesy, like aggressive font, you know, for all the numbers around the gauges. It's just obvious that you're on a machine way past its day. And here's the biggest crime about this. These are selling for more than a Buell XB. You can pick up a Buell XB for $2,500. You really can't find these under $3,500 or $4,000. There are weird, because the only people that have them are really bizarre Buell purists that maintain that the framers, as they call them, are...
Wait, now, hang on. Whoa. Way to back up.
So the fuel and frame bikes, they call fuelers, and they call these framers. It's just what they call them. There are people that get these and they somehow think that they're more legitimate than the XB series or anything that came afterwards. And, you know, these are like the original run of Buell bikes, right? And they think that they're super classic and important to the history of motorcycling and iconic. And
kind of like people who maintain that the British AC Cobra is superior to the American one.
Was there a British AC Cobra? Wait, no.
Yeah.
No, they were all made by Shelby in California, all the AC Cobras.
No, there were two AC Cobras. There was... Let's see.
Is this a different car with coincidentally the same name?
All right. We're probably going to have to edit this.
Yeah.
I may be wrong. Was it the Cobra? Am I mixing up? Am I thinking of a different car?
Let me tell you like what this bike is in reality. Mm-hmm. You decide, okay, I want something American and quirky and cool and weird. Oh, I'll get a Buell. This is like a cheap like Walmart knockoff of a Buell. Right? Like, oh, it kind of looks like a Buell. It says Buell on it, but it's spec'd down. Like it doesn't have... I
just found a video. This bike is even more horrible in motion.
Yeah, I know. When you move around to the front of it, it's just horrible and horrendous.
Okay, and that plastic just looks way more cheap and awful.
Yeah, this is before the Saralyn, I believe. Yeah, it's...
And all the plastic along the top just doesn't really seem to fit or make...
It's just put together sloppy.
It looks like it's got hand-me-down plastics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's no good. It's no good. Now, I understand that, like, they had to put something together quickly or whatever. you know, the Cyclone is really no better, but at least that one isn't upsetting to look at, right?
Yeah.
And the message that you're giving the world when you're on a Thunderbolt is, it's like wearing sweatpants. Like, you're probably cooler on a Honda Metropolitan. And it pains me to say it, but there you go. Buell S3T, or any of the STs, because there's an ST1, there's an S1T or ST1 and a 2 and a 3. And the 3 is like the full touring package. Find a picture of the full touring one with all the bags and everything. They did actually come with really nice bags with these removable liners. And I'm not sure if they were quick detached, but they were detachable bags. I want to say they were quick detached, though. And yeah, it looks even worse with the bags on it.
I mean, somehow, those aren't very large bags.
They're larger than you think. I have seen them in person and ridden one of these. Yeah.
You can't just slap some storage on a bike and call it the touring package.
Well, you can if you give it really awful handlebars like they did, and a super and a super upsetting looking bikini fairing. Oh, another thing, there's this aftermarket option for these leg wind deflectors. Do you see that on the side there? See that little piece of plastic that kind of comes down?
Oh, this?
Yes. What do you think those go for?
I'm sure
hundreds of dollars is the answer. And they do jack shit. This is a bike that
I don't know how I feel about this.
This is a bike that answers a question that nobody ever asked. What if my Sportster could look like a naked tourer? No one ever asked that question. And this bike produced a really upsetting answer to it. Because that's what it is. And, you know, again, I absolutely adore pretty much everything that came after this with the Buell name. But I cannot sign off on this one. And I've tried. I have tried. But I can't do it. I mean, the only thing is, like, yeah, it had early fuel injection. Okay. But, yeah.
All right, let's move on.
And you want to talk about thirsty? These get like Honda Sportster. That's why it has this big 5.5 gallon tank, because it gets Harley Sportster fuel economy, which is not good. So
all right,
cool. Let's move on. Let's move on to something fun. All right,
yeah.
Okay. Okay, what are we talking now?
We got a couple of mini categories here.
Okay.
We're going to go over. First of all, we're going to do...
Oh, the attention bikes.
Yes. So first we're going to do bikes that get more attention than they deserve.
Okay.
By the way, this is the ultimate listicle episode.
Yeah, sorry about that, guys. But okay, so bikes that get too much attention. There's a lot of bikes just on styling points alone that get way too many gas station conversations going. And I don't know. It's upsetting. It's not that I don't think you should be talking to people about your bike, because you should be. But there's a few that are just pulling, that are punching above their weight class, and they, I don't know. For whatever reason, it upsets me a little bit. So what do we got on this list? In no particular order.
First of all, we have the Ninja 650.
Okay, the problem with the Ninja 650, which we went about in at depth when it was worst bike in the world, is it's parading as a super sport, and it is so not a super sport.
Right. When you see a Ninja 650 from a distance, you're going to start to get a little excited, and then you're going to get up to, and you're going to see it, and then either you have no idea what you're looking at in which case, lucky for you. Or you're just immediately met with disappointment once you recognize what it is.
Yes. Now, when I was riding my ZX6 around, every once in a while I'd be at like a red light or something, or I'd be in a grocery store parking lot, whatever it would be, and someone would come by, some dude usually, and they'd just be like, hey, nice Ninja. And I'd sort of be like, yeah, you know, because I was really jazzed about the bike. But it was at least a legit Ninja. And at the time it was made, it was the fastest production 600. It actually had some sort of street cred, you know, at one point. So, you know, I'd sort of take it. The problem is the Ninja 650 gets the same thing. Some guy walking by just sees that it says Ninja and goes, hey, nice Ninja. And it's,
yeah, instead of being, it's not that kind of bike. Instead of being a 100 horsepower inline four, it's a detuned V-twin.
No, parallel twin.
Oh, parallel twin. Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, it shouldn't garner that. It should not get that attention. All right, moving on. What's next?
Similar story. New Bonnevilles.
Okay. Again, it's a good bike. It's a cool bike. It's not a classic. And this isn't really something that, again, a lot of these problems aren't, this isn't, like, if you have one of these bikes, this isn't really your problem. This is a problem that the general public has about your bike, right? You want a new Bonneville? Cool. It's an excellent bike. I can't tell you not to get it. Now, it's not a classic, and there are non-motorcycle people that at least know what a Bonneville is, and they'll walk up and go, what is this? What's going on? Is this a class? What year is this thing? What's going on? And don't play into it. Don't try to pretend. Be like, oh, yeah, it's Bonneville. This is one of the classic bikes and blah, 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 blah. And just do everything you can to not say that it's a 2015. I don't think there's a lot of people doing that. I'm not accusing a lot of people of doing that. But it is not a classic. It's not. It's a completely different bike. It doesn't even have any old Bonneville DNA in it, really. So it's not a displacement that any old Bonneville ever was. It's, you know, it's liquid cooled. It's carbureted. It's just not actually an old Bonneville. People need to get over this. They've been making it for over 10 years now.
All right. Now, here's the really big one.
Okay.
Ural sidecar rig.
Holy shit.
Now, here's the thing about the Ural is the Ural is such a terrible motorcycle that people couldn't possibly believe that it's still being made. And so it instantly gets classic recognition.
Yeah. Well, these are coming in at what, like probably not even 40 horsepower is my guess.
Let's see.
Now, Ural sidecar guy is trying to pass his bike off as a classic because he's going to make a whole bunch of arguments about how it's really the same bike that they always made, right? So he's going to feel like he is riding this classic, and he's not. What he did was he paid $16,000 for an underpowered, outdated machine that looks old. And, I mean, if that brings you joy, okay. But people walk up and they're like, is this from World War II? Like, did Steve McQueen own this thing? Like, what's going on? Like, what? Tell me the story. I don't want to hear your Ural sidecar story.
It's a 2017.
Yeah. It's a 27. Exactly. I couldn't find a dealer, so I mail ordered it from Pittsburgh. Like, you know, these are predominantly like sold at like scooter dealerships, I think. And I've never been to a scooter dealership that didn't have like one of these just hanging around until someone crazy bought it. Like, again, this is a bike that asks a question, that answers a question that no one ever asked. Do you need your motorcycle to come with a shovel? I'm over it. The Ural sidecar thing is not cool. And in this category as well, I'm going to throw in the weird Shang Zhang bike and the Neatner, Deppner, whatever you call it. Those get lumped in here as well. Same crime. Okay, what else gets too much attention?
Last one we'll throw in here. This is more of a general category, but any Harley with a performance package of any kind.
Okay, on a previous episode, I called out to see if anyone could provide me proof of someone racing an S&S motor. After I received no responses on this, I looked into it for myself. And on the S&S website, I only found examples of three. And only one provided evidence of a bike actually racing. And by racing, they meant trying unsuccessfully to set Bonneville speed records. One of the bikes was clearly just a custom build made to look like a race bike. And one was of someone planning to race a bike, but had not yet. So, no one's racing S&S motors. There you go. So, the Harley performance package. So, yeah, you're buying a Harley that's, for whatever reason, like, robbed of power. And then you have to pay a premium for them to then unlock that power, right? And what kind of power are we really achieving here? Like, okay, let's say you do get your Harley up to 200 horsepower. It still can't turn for shit. Like, what? So you're going to, like, drag race in what class?
Like, right. Well, I mean, the whole thing is it's not designed for it. Like, it doesn't have the aerodynamics to make it worth it. It's not nimble enough to actually be raced. There's a 99.999% chance your Harley isn't a flat tracker.
Right.
What do you actually gain out of this? Because even as underpowered and understressed as Harleys are, they have all the power to do what they were designed to do.
Right. Yeah, it goes against the philosophy of your bike if you're doing, like, every performance thing you can to try to squeeze all this power out of it. It doesn't make any sense. And it's definitely not cost effective. You know, when you can just, like, get an R6 and reprogram the ECU and be a lot faster for, like, $9,000, right? Get a used R6 for, like, $7,000 and then put $2,000 into, like, exhaust and remapping the ECU. It's really hard to come up with a reason you should be spending north of $40,000 to get a Harley that makes 200 horsepower. I know it's possible. I don't think it's a good idea. Because you're putting a lot of stress suddenly on your understressed motor. So you're going to have very, very limited engine life. But maybe more importantly, no one really cares. Let's say your Harley is really fast. No one cares. I mean, no one really cares how fast your bike is, no matter what you have. But
now, again, this is another category where the only reason you would really be doing this, because you can't convey to people that you're passing in traffic that, oh, look how hot rodded out my Sportster is. But what you can do is brag to your other Harley friends that your Sportster has more horsepower than their Sportster.
Exactly. And those are the people that are giving this bike too much attention. Are other Harley people. I don't get it. I kind of understand it when you got, like, you know, someone on a Street Glide and someone rolls up with the Ultra Limited and they're like, whoa, that's really nice. Because an Ultra Limited is really a beautiful bike in a lot of ways, and it has all those creature comforts, and it's finished so nicely. It is a nice product. It's a really nice bike. So I sort of get that sort of thing when someone shows up with the one that's got all the extras on it. I kind of get that. I don't get the specced out engine guy. I don't get it. Anyway. Okay. So that's enough. That's enough there. Now we've got bikes that do not get enough attention.
Right.
So what we got here?
So we're just doing a blanket Moto Guzzi minus the V7. So just the entire Moto Guzzi lineup. Moto Guzzi as a brand.
I have such a hard on lately for anything that says Moto Guzzi. Like, I love the V7. I love the V9. I love the Flying Fortress.
The Flying Fortress is straight up Count Dracula's motorcycle.
I don't know. Again, it looks like the NM4. It's got that sort of bat bike thing to it. Well, you know what? We're going to have to bring up Flying Fortress in the next category that we're talking about. Anyway.
Oh, yes, we will.
Yeah, the Flying Fortress is like, it's a Moto Guzzi California, like, I don't know, doing some sort of like strange, like something in between like bondage and cosplay. And I don't know. I'm just into it. I'm into it for exactly the same reason I love the Victory Vision.
Yes.
It's technically a great motorcycle and it looks outrageous enough that half the people love it and half the people absolutely hate it. And I think that's where you really always want to be. So that's wonderful. Every Moto Guzzi is designed to do 300,000 miles should you follow the maintenance perfect. That's amazing. Moto Guzzis they're just fun to ride. They make great torque. They make just enough power no matter which one you get. The Grizzo is a bit of a styling disaster. I can't deal with it. But outside of that, I think they're all absolutely beautiful. It's a legendary name. It's a legendary brand. Everything about them just makes huge sense. There's nothing stupid about the way they're put together. There aren't unnecessary bells and whistles. They're not bad on price. I mean, for a European, like, not quite boutique, but almost boutique bike, they come in at a pretty good cost. They're not very common to see. You know, when you're on a Guzzi, you're kind of riding your own ride. You're probably the only person you know who has one.
So I did look up the market share when I got the Norge. Moto Guzzi makes up 0.3% of U.S. motorcycle sales.
Okay, so you have to make over 99 motorcycle friends before you're likely to meet someone else with a Guzzi.
Yes.
Hey, I mean, so it's, you know, without, it's exclusive without having to try to be exclusive. That's super cool, right?
Yeah.
So there you go. That's all really the reason you need. You get to be sort of like in the secret club without having an attitude about it. It's effortless. Effortlessly cool.
Yeah.
How can you turn that down? Oh my God. Guzzi's so great. And it's just fun to say Moto Guzzi. It's just fun to say. Okay. Yeah. All right. What else we got on this list?
We've got Daytona 675.
Oh my gosh. So this is like the bike that really made Triumph.
New Triumph.
Hinkley Triumph. This is the bike that really made them. Well, it was just called, it was like just the Speed 3 or the Triumph Triple 3 or Speed, whatever it was.
The Speed Triple.
They were kind of one bike at one point. And it was just a 600 in line 3, I think.
I don't think so. I thought it was always a 675.
And they made like a 1090 as well or something in line 3 or whatever Daytona for a little while there, which was crazy and one of the absolute top nutso bikes. So again, around the time Torque came out.
Yeah, early 2000s.
Isn't that the bike that
Ice Cube's
riding?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing just some awesome ads for those in motorcycle magazines. But so the Daytona, again, the Daytona stands alone to me because it's this great example of what you can do outside of the spec racing class while still being in the spec racing class, right?
Right. Because it's, it's a lot of people probably don't know this, but you know, in the super sport class, it's not strictly 600cc,
right?
It's 600cc inline 4 or 675cc inline 3
or it's 800cc
twin,
right? And but somehow the 675 with the buttloads of torque and everything, it's just a better bike than the regular 600s. It's so much more fun. It's got a different sound. It's got so much to it.
So now next year in MotoGP, what we will be getting is Moto2 will move up from a 600cc inline 4 motor to a Triumph 750cc inline 3 motor.
Is it a 750? I thought it was like the 700 or 725 or maybe even still a 675. It's going to be super cool. Yeah. But that's how cool this bike is. They're basically taking that motor and altering it a little bit for the world's, like, well, I guess second most premier motorcycle racing series, Moto2. Like, that's just hands down, just ice cold, sub-zero, cool. That basically Moto2 next year is going to be just Triumph Daytona's, you know, on steroids. So, yeah, why wouldn't you have what? Why wouldn't you get one of these instead of a regular 600 is my question. Why would you choose the R6 over the Triumph? I don't think there's a good explanation except you're just trying to rep the Yamaha brand super hard or something. I don't know. The Daytona is super cool. So you got to go with it. All right. What else we got?
We also have the CB1.
Oh. So yeah, CB1 is a really interesting bike. This doesn't get enough attention to me because it's the very last of a whole class of bikes that has only just reappeared again with the Ninja 400. The Ninja 250 was always selling well. In fact, I think it was Kawasaki's best-selling bike the entire time they had it.
Right.
And then Honda brings in the CBR 250R, and then there's the R3 and all that. And then they moved to 300s. Now they're moving into 400s. Well, this is a cyclical thing.
Right.
And it all happened years ago. And it sort of ended with the CB1, which is an inline 400cc bike. And it's crazy cool and weird looking. And if you can find a picture, see if you can bring up a picture of the full fairing that you could get for it. The full fairing is super rare. It can even be tricky to find pictures of it, but it is available. Like, you can find them if you look hard enough and long enough and you're willing to just buy it instantly as soon as you find it. But the CB1 is the successor to the now cult status collectible bike CB400SS, which is a great little screamer of a bike. I can't remember what the CB1 like revs up to, but it's crazy. I mean, the bike just screams and it's a hoot to ride and it looks so distinct. And I think when people are riding them, no one recognizes what they are for starters. And then people just kind of assume that you've got like a small sport bike that you've crashed. So you had to take all the fairings off of it. No, that's an NSR, which is not entirely dissimilar, but that's a Japan only bike, the NSR 400. This is sort of the version of the NSR that the United States got. Because I don't know if the CB1 was available overseas. So it's great. It's super cool. You can talk about it. It's rare and it's not very common. And it had really great performance for what it was and all that cool stuff. So I don't know. You got to go for it. Okay. Anything else on our doesn't get enough attention list? This is not a comprehensive list by any means. Just a few bikes that we think aren't really getting enough love right now.
We got a few other ones. I think the only one we really need to mention is the VMAX.
The VMAX. Yeah, I don't know why not enough people know what the VMAX is. I think plenty of older guys do, but I don't think that the current young generation of motorcyclists gets the VMAX.
I also think it's also one of those important things where, it's similar to like the Rocket 3, where, we could just keep making motorcycles bigger and bigger and more powerful and more ridiculous, but it doesn't really serve anybody's interest and it's not necessarily more fun. But we all need to have like that one bike that just crosses the line in every category so that we know where the line is.
Yeah.
And both the Rocket 3 and the VMAX kind of do that, going out into absurd size, absurd unusable power, to the point of extreme impracticality.
I love it, yeah. I mean, I've already said so many things about the VMAX, but...
because I think even the VMAX would say, if you said... we need to make a 1600cc VMAX. Even the VMAX would be like, okay, hang on a minute.
The VMAX would be like, it's been like 6 months since I've watched Harley Davidson, the motorcycle, and the Marlboro Man. So I'm going to go like watch that again. I think I have a weird hidden talent for just impersonating the VMAX. That's for sure the VMAX's favorite movie. I don't know why, but it is for sure. I don't think VMAX is so much into the Harley Davidson, but I think VMAX connects a lot with the Marlboro Man. Anyway... yeah, the VMAX is an extreme that not enough people recognize, for sure. It's an icon that's somewhat faded. It's a good thing the VMAX doesn't care. So there we go. All right. I think we've said what we need to say about those. Let's move on to something else here. Okay, we're back. And now we're going to move on to the ridiculously frivolous topic of motorcycle names.
All right, here we go.
Because there's a lot to a name, and there are some disappointing names that have come along, and there's some great ones. And I guess we're going to identify what we think are some of the best motorcycle names, but we've noticed that there are some distinct categories that these names fall into. What did we come up with, Swiggy?
Well, let's just go through them and we'll announce them as we go. So first category are the animal names.
Animal names. Okay, so probably one of the most recognized ones is the Triumph Tiger. And not a lot of people know that there was a Triumph Tigress, which was a scooter back in the day, and I think a pretty cool looking one. Well, I think it's cool. It's definitely unusual looking, but
we also have the Thundercat.
The Thundercat. This is what the YZF 600 is called. Yeah. Not the R6. The YZF 600 was called the Thundercat overseas. Super cool name.
We've got a lot of the Honda names, very bird related. We've got the Nighthawk.
Yep.
We've got the Super Blackbird. We've got the Hawk. We've got the Super Hawk, and arguably also...
The Super Hawk's so good it was used twice.
Yes. And then we've also, some arguably bird-related is the Goldwing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also got the Silverwing.
And a very short-lived Japanese scooter company in the 40s called the Silver Pigeon.
That's a good one. And we also have to mention the Hayabusa, which is Japanese for Peregrine Falcon. Yes. Which was named so because it was built during the Speed Wars to defeat the Super Blackbird.
Right. Awesome name. And that name is cooler. I mean, if they just called it the Falcon or the Peregrine Falcon, if they just called it the Falcon, it wouldn't have been as cool because it would have been a little too on the nose. And by thinly veiling it...
And calling it the Hayabusa overseas.
It's like so much more aggressive. It's so much more incendiary. It brings out so much more. It makes it just a little bit clever, you know. And it's one thing to get like trashed and dissed on. It's a whole nother level when it's made slightly clever, right?
Yeah.
Suzuki really hit it out of the park with that name. And everyone knows what a Hayabusa is. You don't have to call it the GSX-R 1300RR. It's the Hayabusa. Or just simply, the Busa.
Right. So, there are some other names that they're kind of missing. There really should be a few more cat names. I don't know what else you could fit in. Maybe, like, the Panther... Or the cougar, or
I think there could be a great like mid-sized sporty bike called the Lynx. I think the Lynx would be a great
name. The Lynx is a good one
for a good like mid-sized, probably naked, you know, sport bike.
There also, I've noticed that there is kind of a trend towards a lot of flying creatures and also weather-related names, and there's also a lot of like kind of jungly names and kind of a lot of the land-based stuff, but there's really a lack of sea-based names. So I was thinking, especially like the CBR 650F with its fairing is very kind of shark-like.
Yes.
So I was thinking, there aren't a lot of good shark names because most shark species have shark in the name, which is too on the nose.
Well, and then there's also things like the tiger shark.
Yeah. 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 Fish names. I was thinking a good fish name, a good shark name for like the 650F would be the Mako.
I wholeheartedly agree on this. The Mako is a fantastic name for it.
Another alternative would be the Barracuda.
Yeah.
Which isn't a shark, but it's a fast fish. It's very cool. I like
also, it. Also, Mako would look really good done in hiragana on the side of a bike.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's got to be in there. Okay, so let's move on to the next category, which is weather-related names and elemental names.
There are a lot of these.
So... The first ones I want to go over are fire-based names. There's the Firestorm, which is the alternate name for the Super Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Fireblade, which is
the CBR 1000RR.
Yeah. And then there's the Firebolt, which is the XB9.
Yeah.
I think we need to have a moratorium on any new bikes with fire in the name.
Yes.
I think we're good there. Now, we've also got lightning names. We've got the Lightning. We've got the Thunderbolt. We've got the Thunderbird. We've got the Bolt. Did I say Thunderbolt?
I can't remember. You probably
Thunderbolt. Did. And we've also got Cyclone and Hurricane.
Hurricane is a pretty damn cool name. Now, that's what the CBR 600 was called.
Yeah, the 600RR.
And we're suggesting the change to Mako on that one.
No, I think the 650F.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you said the 650F. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Now, there are two other weather-based names that have not been taken that somebody should make. I'm suggesting that our new hyperbike design that we came up with for Honda,
oh yeah,
the CBXX, the alternate name should be the Tsunami.
Yeah, the CBXX Tsunami.
I gotta get that one in. And then I think at some point, the electric bike idea I had for Suzuki, mm-hmm. Suzuki should call that the Typhoon.
Yeah. Well, except I don't know if, like, you know, electricity and water go together real well, but okay.
You can do whatever. Okay, so next category is weapons.
Okay.
So we've got a few here. Suzuki went pretty hard in the paint in this category.
Yeah, they did.
You've got the Katana.
Which is a great name. Katana at one point was almost or as iconic as Ninja.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, just by being a terrible bike, it just tarnished the name and Suzuki had to abandon it.
So, an equally horrible bike, you've got the Gladius.
Yeah, not super awesome. Well, isn't the Gladius the Bandit?
Yes.
Okay.
You've also got, from BSA, you've got the Aerial Arrow.
Yeah.
Which is a little... It's a little,
That's just a questionable bike in every sense.
Yeah. You've got the Bullet 500.
Okay, going strong.
You've got the Triumph Rocket 3.
Yes.
So, there's some good stuff here. I'm thinking other kind of sword-based names we could go with, trying to think, you know, what kind of adventure style or, you know, what's something that would fit with the type of bike.
So I suggest that the CBR 500R should go with Switchblade, right? Because it's still cool, it's aggressive, and it sort of like suggests something scrappy, mm-hmm. right? So if the CBR 1000 is the Fireblade, the 500 could be the Switchblade. It's a cool name that, you know, denotes it's capable of something, but also doesn't suggest that it has to be the most powerful, crazy thing also.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's pretty strong.
Okay. Here's one for you. For the KLR 650.
Okay.
The Machete.
Whoa, that is good. That is really good. Holy shit. The Machete. Holy crap. Why is there not a Machete yet? Oh, God. We really need to be fucking hired by Honda. Jesus Christ. Like, the Machete. Wow, you just dropped that hard on me. That's so good. That's perfect. Holy crap, that's perfect. Okay, all right, keep going. Okay.
All right, so now also, as kind of a not fitting into the 250 category, maybe Suzuki making something a little bit bigger than the Gixxer 250, maybe a 350 or 400,
mm-hmm.
calling it the Hanzo.
I don't know. The Hanzo is such a great name. It almost might have to be a hyperbike. It might have to be the CBXX Hanzo.
I feel like Suzuki's kind of got that category cornered since they've already got Katana and Gladius. It kind of fits with their theme.
Okay. So we were talking about how the Hayabusa really needs to be retired so it can become one with the Force. Let it go for a couple years, then come back with a new hyperbike called the Hanzo.
That works too. Yeah, because I guess Hanzo, you know, as like, you know, the master sword maker is kind of like, it's a step up.
Mm-hmm.
So, it does kind of make sense for more of a flagship product to be called the Hanzo.
And it's a name that everyone is going to be able to connect with, you know, since Kill Bill. Like, everyone knows Han, that you know, if they don't, enough people know it that people will clue in those that don't know.
Right.
And it's short and sweet. And again, it would look really great in hiragana or kanji, right?
Yeah.
Plastered on the side of a bike. I love Hanzo. That's so good.
Now, I'm thinking for like for Triumph, if they made, you know, kind of similar to what's their tour called with the big parallel twin?
Who again?
Triumph.
The Tiger?
The Tiger. They could make, as an alternative to that, something that just feels really British and would make like a sport tour or a tour name. I'm thinking Longbow.
Longbow is good.
Where it's sleek, it's elegant, it's got range, it's kind of, it fits with the British identity of the bike.
You know another one that might?
The company.
The Bayonet.
The Bayonet.
Like, if Honda, like, re-envisioned the, like, the DeVille, right? Which they kind of did with the touring version of the NC700, right? What if they found a way to hop it up with just a little bit more power so it wasn't a disappointing tourer, and then, you know, really brought the styling back up to date, added in some hard lines. I don't think the Bayonet is a name that would work in the American market, but I think overseas, where they're sort of a little bit more accepting with like the sort of flowy names, I think the Bayonet could work.
I'm not super feeling it, but I could see it working. All right. I think we should move on to the next category. Yep. And this is my favorite category.
Oh, I know what this is. This is mine too.
This is enemy combatants.
Yes. There are a surprising number of these. So we got like the Marauder.
We've got the Marauder. We've got the Intruder. We've got the Commando. The Rebel. The Valkyrie. The Ninja.
Ninja, by the way, is hands down the best in this category, and probably...
It's probably the best motorcycle name there is.
It is. Like, I believe that Ninja is probably the most recognized word in motorcycles after Harley Davidson.
Yeah.
Like, every layperson knows what a Ninja is. Like, and it's even, it's great because it even, like, transcends the idea of a single motorcycle. It's now, like, a whole line of motorcycles from Kawasaki, right? Everything from 300 up to 14.
No, from 250.
Well, they don't make it 250 anymore.
No, but...
Ninja spans everything that they do. It just does. And every, like, engine type and range and all of that, there's a Ninja in there somewhere. And just because it's that good of a freaking name, it's that good that it still has, like, the weird 80s/90s, like, script style to the way it's written on the bike. They haven't they haven't changed the actual Ninja logo at all because it's just that fucking solid. It's such a great fucking name.
What else we have? There's also the Scout.
Oh, yeah.
As well as the Ronin.
The Ronin. I hate the Ronin, but I know other people love the Ronin. Whatever. Cool name. Cool name. I gotta give it that. It's a cool name. So
another kind of name that I was thinking of, and this would maybe make more sense on, like, a big, heavy tour or cruiser. I was thinking the Vanguard.
Yeah, that could work.
It could also make sense for an oversized sport tour, like a 1200cc sport tour.
If Victory was still in business, the Victory Vanguard.
Yes.
That really works. It would have to be, like, it, like, what would have succeeded the vision, right?
It wouldn't be that big. I think it needs to be more sport tour oriented, because, you know, it's the thing that arrives first, and it's imposing. Like, it's the Vanguard.
Right. So it could have been a stripped down vision. It could have just had, like, a much smaller front fairing, but still kept that weird angular thing to it. And, you know, maybe lose the great big giant boxes on the back in exchange for, I don't know, something else storage wise. But yeah. Or, I mean, it could have just been, well, okay, how about this? The Octane could have been the Vanguard, right?
The Octane with the touring package.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's exact same concept in name and function as the Scout. Since the Scout literally is the Victory Octane.
Right.
So there we go. Yeah, that's what they could have done. Though the Octane's a really fucking cool name.
It is.
I don't know if you can get rid of the Octane. I mean, it is strange that, you know, the Octane name is supposed to suggest power, even though they don't, you know, necessarily tell you what Octane the bike's going to be using.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure you could have just, you can run an Octane off of regular old 85, 87.
Yeah.
So, but it's still a fucking cool name. There's no way around it. Okay. I feel like we're still missing something in Enemy Combatants. There's got to be more names there because there's so many of those.
Oh, I've got one for you.
Okay.
What about the Instigator?
That's not good, but I've got a good one. What about the Wraith?
The Wraith.
That would be a pretty good one. What would the Wraith be? Who would make the Wraith?
Buell could have made the Wraith.
You're right. Buell could have made, yeah, EBR or Buell could have made a Wraith. What would the Wraith be? It would be like a, I know what the Wraith would have been. The Wraith would have been their version, like their, like a new, like, okay, if Buell gets brought back by Harley, it'll be their new version of the Blast.
Ooh, okay. So it would also be a sweet name for an electric bike. Being,
oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. Okay, that's what the Wraith is. The Wraith is what Harley should call their new electric bike.
There we go.
That's it. Okay, cool. Yeah, Harley doesn't seem to have very many names that fit into any of these categories, do they?
But they also don't have a lot of names that don't end in Glide or Bob.
Yeah.
So, we're not really... You'll notice a distinct lack of Harley inspiration for this list.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, we have one more category.
Oh, we do? Okay.
Yeah. And this is the adventure/location category.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So there's Africa Twin springs to mind.
Yeah, there's Transalp.
Transalp, yeah, very similar.
There's the Venture.
Venture.
You've also got the DeVille.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Bonneville.
Okay, that's probably the best name in this category.
Well, you've also got the Daytona.
Oh, yeah. No, Daytona's cooler. Daytona's way now, cooler.
We're also going to throw Metropolitan into this category, which is technically a style or person, but it's kind of location-y.
Yeah.
A name that I really like, unfortunately, it's going to be a Royal Enfield. Is Royal Enfield is releasing an adventure bike called the Himalaya.
Yeah, and it's going to be a disaster.
I like the name, but I'm just afraid I'm going to be super disappointed with the end product. I think a really good name for an adventure bike
mm-hmm.
would be the Siberia.
That's good. Okay. I just got it. All right. If EBR was still around, I think they could make an updated version of the Ulysses and call it the Hades.
It would have to be reimagined pretty heavily and made a lot more aggressive.
Well, everything EBR was doing towards the end was a lot more aggressive.
That's true.
Yeah.
The Hades.
I think it's pretty solid. If Evel Knievel was around today, he'd be riding a Hades.
A Hades. Yeah, that works. Okay. I think that's all I have for that category, unless you can think of another name. What would be a good American location name besides?
Well, we don't have a bike called the Talladega, which we should totally have. Talladega denotes, speed and all of that, but it's also just really fun to say. It's one of the most exotic place names that we really have in the States. Talladega. It's great.
It is good. You could also have...
Oh, there's the Victory Vegas.
The Vegas. Okay.
Pretty solid fucking name.
It's a good name.
The Moto Guzzi California.
Oh, there's a California. What about, could you call a bike just the Laguna or the Laguna Seca?
Well, there is a Seca. Yamaha made the Seca.
Is that actually named after Laguna Seca?
I think it is. Okay, this is really going out there, and it's nothing that can happen, but wouldn't it have been great if there was a bike in the 90s called the Miami? It's something that totally could have existed, right?
I'm thinking you could go even further and have just something utterly ridiculous, like the Jackson Hole.
The Jackson Hole would have to be...
The Jackson Hole would come with a CVT transmission and beer cooler panniers.
Yeah, I know. I see that more as I've got an impromptu game, right? You've got to give me something that you think could absolutely no way could possibly work as a bike name, and I'm going to tell you how it could work as a bike name. We might have to completely edit this out, but I just want to give this a go.
All right. The Spork.
Okay, so what the Spork is, it's a bike only sold in, Norway or something like that, right? Where, names can be so weird, no one gives a shit, right? And what the Spork is a motorcycle that comes with a fairly quick conversion from wheel to tracks, right? When you buy it, it comes with wheels, but it also comes with tracks that you can fit over the wheels that then turns it into a very off-road.
Into a timber sled?
Exactly. And that's the Spork.
Okay.
What else you got? Because I feel like I knocked that out of the fucking park.
All right. The Goat.
Oh, the Goat? Oh, okay. So the Goat is... okay, I know what the Goat is. The Goat is... the ZX20R. right? That just for some reason, Kawasaki loses its mind. And after, you know, Honda takes our advice and makes the CBXX Hanzo,
they decide to make a V8 Ninja.
The Kawasaki decides to take the gentleman's agreement and just piss all over it. And they make a 2-liter inline four. Right. and like, it's completely unusable, right? Like, it handles like shit. There's no way for it to make like low power. It's just like, it just all comes on at once. It's good for nothing. It's like that weird jet bike with the 20-mile range. Like, yeah, all it's right. The world's fastest bike, but only for 20 miles, right? It's like that. It's just completely stupid. It costs like $120,000. They only make like 4 of them a year, but it's just the and Kawasaki goes, "What? Are you like, we lose substantial amounts of money doing this. Like, that's it. That's the end." You know, and it's capable of like, you know, 423 miles an hour or something. That's the goat.
Okay. All right. I've got one more for you.
Okay.
The Guppy.
The Guppy. Okay. Well, if the CB650F is going to be the Mako, then what they need to do is take, bring back, like, you know, you used to have like the CB, like 125s and 175s and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Get a little fully fared 125, kind of like the Chinese are cranking out like little fully fared 125s. Right. And if Honda's going to go with some fish names or some shark names, then they've got the CBR 125 Guppy.
Okay.
Now, I think this is a name that will only work in Japan. Like, here it would be the CBR 125, which no one would buy. But the Japanese are sort of like into just sort of weird cutesy names for shit. And I think they would accept that. It'd be the Japan only name for the CBR 125R, the Guppy.
Well, actually, here in America, they could call it the Tetra.
Oh, yes. Yes. The Tetra. Wow. God damn it. Honda, why won't you hire us? We keep telling you. Like, okay, look, everyone just start writing in letters to Honda that we just need to be paid to just sit around drinking beers, smoking cigarettes, cracking wise. Like, we'll just sit in like on a couch in like headquarters or something and just bullshitting podcasting until we come up with gold like this once a week, and then we just march straight upstairs to the headquarters. just march straight upstairs with like a piece of paper or something like completely illegible, just scribbled on it.
A napkin drawing.
And we're like, this is the next big thing. The Tetra. That's brilliant. Oh, the Tetra is totally a 125.
Well, it's an awesome name because it's like, it kind of sounds cool, uh-huh. But it's also just like a tiny fish.
Right. Yeah. This is all hinged upon the 650F being the Mako.
Yeah.
Right. They have to establish like a fish theme going on first. Something aquatic, something sharkish some shark lines have to be established first, and then you drop the Tetra.
And then you could have, like, for the less serious names and the less kind of aggressive names, you know, you could have the scooters, and you could have like a 400cc scooter just called like the Tuna.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the Tuna. Because tunas are fucking fast. People don't think about it, but tunas are fast. Okay? Tuna. Mm.
Oh, God. I don't know. You can have a 650 twin called the Big Tuna.
The Big Tuna.
I'm not totally sold on that, but Okay, this is probably a good point.
Yeah, to I don't know if we're going to top the Tetra and the Spork. Okay. All right. Now, before we go out, we're just going to shamelessly ask everyone to please leave us a review, just because we want to be able to come up, you know, quicker on iTunes searches and things like that. Just to grow the podcast, we don't need your money or anything like that. So please leave us a review. It helps out. And email us. We always want you to email us. So let's run the outro.
And I don't want to die. Just want to ride on my spork.
Cool. All right. The email is nokomoto@gmail.com. Please, let's hear from you.
All right, bye. Bye.